Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Good evening and welcome to the iOS show immediately after the Apple keynote tonight. Finally, we have some news to talk about, and it isn't just rumours about new bits and bobs and other things. We have the usual suspects with us tonight. We have Robert. How are you this evening, Robert?
I am quite fine, thank you, Paul.
Yes, we just sat through.
A bit fatigued.
Yes, I was going to say.
A bit fatigued.
Yeah, unfortunately sat through best part of 2 hours of Apple keynote tonight, so we'll be coming over everything about that. We also have Ian. Ian, how are you this evening?
I'm good, thanks, Paul. How are you doing?
I am awesome, thank you. I am awesome. I'm very much looking forward to getting this through and getting some fantastic discussion in the hopes that we haven't left our A game during the keynote, which would be a bit of a shame. And finally, as always, we have everybody's favourite podcaster, Roddy. How are you this evening?
Hello. I've just been talking to these chaps for the last 2 hours all the way through the keynote, and I am frankly sick of them. So I will be tolerating Ian and Paul and Robert for the next hour grudgingly, and it might show. Also, if I may just very briefly, and I know I always say, hey, I just very briefly do this or that or X or Y. Paul, last week, you may remember, was going to register the domain paulweekleyschucklecorner.com and gave the illusion to you, the listener, that he was actually going to do that. But I can tell you he didn't register it, but I did. So if you do want to go to paulweekleyschucklecorner.com, you can have a chuckle yourself at the expense of Paul Wheatley in a corner.
Oh, superb. I just want to make it clear for those of you that go there, I do not wear that outfit on a regular basis. That was my stag do, and I was forced to wear that t-shirt. I don't regularly wear that type of outfit.
That's Paul's story in it.
Yes. Anyway, moving swiftly on, first of all, before we get into the keynote, just have a few housekeeping things. We have a review. It is not referencing our sound quality, unfortunately. It's from Stuart Hurd. A nice informative podcast delivered in a fun and sometimes humorous way. Sometimes.
Sometimes. We're the most fun it's possible to have.
It doesn't go on too long and can be helpful to listen to with the host picks and trouble gusset section in the end. However, if I had a pick a flaw with a podcast, then it would be the trouble gusset section. I'd like a tiny bit more professionalism in the responses, gentlemen. That's directed at you. I don't think that's directed at me. In the responses. And maybe some quicker answers. Do the hosts know what the questions are before the start of the show? If not, it might help if they did. Get Bart Bouchotts on with the show more. Otherwise, keep up the good work. So we will try our best there, Stuart, and get to the crux of the issue quicker.
Well, we will then, right?
Yes.
You just wait.
I've just noticed we've got a few comunicados as well, and I think this is from the same gentleman. I've never made that connection before. We've got an email from Stuart Hurd. I'm assuming it's the same Stuart Hurd. I'd like to point out that you don't have to have your iOS plugged into power source to sync back up over Wi-Fi. My iOS devices have done it automatically without being plugged in, though I believe this to be a bug or an error. But more importantly, you can start a sync or backup from within the settings of your app and your iOS device. You can do this by providing your computer and iOS devices on the same network and have found each other, and that you have enabled Wi-Fi sync in iTunes regards to. So that's kind of broadly what we said a couple of episodes ago when we were discussing this topic. But thank you very much for the feedback, Stuart. We also have another one from Twitter from Ian Wood. Easy Pay in Apple stores. I've used it and felt really self-conscious about walking out with no human interaction or bag. And of course, that's around the news story that we discussed in the last show about the person being arrested because he was in the last page of the screen and had forgotten to check out, or forgotten perhaps in air quotes, but I'm not going to accuse anybody of anything. And finally, for our feedback this week from Peter Emery, he left a comment on the website. Some info re Bluetooth 4.0 and NFC. He sends a link, so I'll put the link in the show notes. The article is entitled The Power of Bluetooth 4, It'll Change Your Life. Here's a particularly relevant extract. One tap hookup. Another convenience newer forms of Bluetooth brings is tongue-tied. Compatibility with NFC chips. Both Bluetooth versions 3 and 4 can talk to NFC hardware and phones and laptops to make pairing a simple process of tapping the two devices together. So you can imagine configuring Wi-Fi settings and mobile gadgets just by resetting them in NFC-equipped routers or hooking up headsets with tablets and phones in the same manner. For example, Motorola's new Elite Silver headset already has this NFC pairing availability. So thank you very much, Ian, Peter, Stuart, and Stuart, assuming you're different people, but I don't think you are, for your feedback. And if you want to send us any feedback, just pop a review in iTunes or send us an email, britishtechnews@gmail.com, or tweet any one of us, and we'll cover that at the end of the show. So I'll take a breath now and let you guys go. So we've just watched the keynote. Broadly,
yes,
what's our opinion? Yeah, what's our opinions
indeed
of it?
I'm not denying it.
What's our thoughts? Go.
It was definitely a keynote.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. No doubt in my mind there. I think we all felt it was a little bit treading water for the first hour.
Yeah.
I think the surprise of the iPhone 5 had gone because there had been so many leaks. The surprise to me was that they called it the iPhone 5, and you all know what a bugbear that is to me, being the 6th-gen phone. There was nothing surprising, and it does look like a great phone, but it's another evolution. Whereas usually when they go up a proper iteration, it's revolution, like the 3G from the first one and the 4 from that. So it feels more like an iPhone 4SS to me.
I see where you're coming from on that, but equally, it's got a whole new construction technology. It's got more pixels on the screen. It's got a new chip inside it. It's got a whole new kind of wireless technology being added to it. So, pretty much everything about it is a step up, a fairly significant step up, I would say, from the iPhone 4S. I think the biggest problem was just that we already knew what was going to be in there because we'd been looking at rumor sites for the last few weeks.
But so, I think even if we didn't know, it doesn't look any different really, does it? It's not the kind of complete redesign a lot of people are expecting.
Well, let's cover the
I would wait until you see them side by side. I mean, I think, just the thinness of it is quite startling to me. And obviously it's taller and it's made out of different materials. To me, it's very clearly a different phone. It's just I think where they are just now is they're perfecting the aesthetic of it. For the first few phones, they kind of went, well, we've got to build this thing and it's got to look a bit like this. And then they decided to do something a bit easy to manufacture because they need to do it in more bulk for the 3G. And then when they came to the 4, they were like, oh, this is a better way to build it. And then I think, again, they've gone, well, this is a better way to build it. But it just happens to look quite similar as all.
I think you might have nailed it there, because the big difference for me between the 4 and the 3G was just when I held it, the difference in quality just in the hand was remarkable. And I've got a funny feeling the iPhone 5 is going to feel a lot better when you actually pick it up and it's lighter and thinner and
But is that a good thing? I mean, that's one of the first things they touched on, is 20% lighter. And when I first got my 4, I was throwing it all over the joint because I would kind of pick it up with the... And I don't know if this is going to sound really stupid because there isn't that much of a difference, but I kept dropping it because I would kind of pick it up expecting it to be heavier, and then it would kind of... I'd pick it up with too much force and I'd drop it under the floor or something like that. I can't help but think that we're getting to a point now where I kind of want to feel like I'm holding something. I want to feel like I'm holding 500 quid's worth of hardware. And if it gets lighter and thinner and disappears into my hand, then it's not 500 quid's worth of hardware anymore. But they were really shouting about that 20% lighter, 18% thinner, so on and so forth.
It's a double-edged sword, that, though, isn't it?
I tell you what you need, Paul. You need a wrist strap for it.
Well, we'll come on to that. They have released wrist straps. Sadly, not for the iPhone. But we'll come on to that.
Hey, maybe they'll release some kind of heavy weight or some kind.
Made out of lead.
Yeah, for instance. That'll solve that kind of problem, I think.
Made out of lead.
That would really fix solution.
That would really fix antenna issues.
Kind of.
So, 20% lighter, 18% thinner. The next thing they covered was the fabled 4-inch screen. Are we happy? Are we sad? Is 4 inches good for anyone?
Sorry.
Well, that kind of depends on the context, I guess.
It's what you do with it that counts, Paul.
Yeah. Are we happy about 4 inches?
Well, it still fits in your hand. That's the main thing.
We've got an extra.
This is just going to descend to innuendo now, isn't it?
I'm going to change the context.
More than it already has.
It's got an extra.
I think it's interesting because there were a lot of concerns about how existing apps are going to work on this taller screen. And with some things, it will just stretch, I suppose. But the little borders at the sides, I guess that could work, couldn't it? As a stopgap measure, they're saying it's going to be really easy for developers to change. I think my only concern is that where you had some apps rather cheekily charging you extra for a Retina version of their app, and then are they going to charge you extra just to have something that fills those black borders at the side of the screen?
Yeah.
The black border filling app update.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw any apps that charge more for Retina.
No, it was HD. I'll take your word for it,
but that seems pretty, you know, low on the I know it costs money to do, but if you're going to do it, you want to do it because that's the way the platform's going, rather than because it represents a clear benefit for the user, in my view.
I think it sucked a bit, and there was more of it, I suppose, with the iPad, because then there were all the HD versions. But then that's slightly justified because it probably did take a bit of work.
Yeah, to make it.
Yeah, iPhone to iPad is definitely a big jump, but retinization for a lot of apps, you know, there's work in it, but equally, you know, every phone that comes after that is going to support at least that resolution. So why wouldn't you? You're going to sell more apps if you do it than if you don't, I guess. So charging more to me seems a bit meh.
I did feel that a lot of the keynote today sort of went over and over the fact that the screen's a bit taller, so your apps can have more on the screen. And then they go to another app and go, this app as well can have more on the screen. You can have more email on your screen. And you kind of, I think we get that. And when they said it was a bigger screen, we sort of twigged you could have more on it.
Kind of, yeah.
They did kind of labor that.
Sorry,
Ian, carry on.
That's the thing about this new phone, is that everything about it is kind of better, but there's nothing that they can really demonstrate with it that makes you go, ooh. Whereas if they had something like the rumored NFC, and you can interact with things with your phone by touching it or swiping it or whatever else, that's the kind of thing that makes for a really good demo. And in this case, they were like, well, it's got a bigger screen, it's faster, it's got better wireless. You know, and these are all things that we've seen before in terms of evolution in the phone. So it's not really new to us in the same way. I felt that the whole presentation could have been cut down quite a lot. They could have fewer demos and we still would have gotten the message just fine, thank you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. So what came after that?
We've got
widescreen video because it's widescreen. Do you notice that? It's tall, but you turn it on its side and then it's widescreen. I thought that's really
shocking.
Cool. That's a game changer.
Oh, hell yeah.
Did you know, Rod, if you hold it vertically, then the screen aspect ratio is 9 to 16.
And that's pretty good. So that means you're watching films as they're meant to be seen and none of this sort of tapping to double tapping to scrolling.
That's 16 to 9 if it's horizontal. It's 9 to 16 if it's vertical. It's a whole bold new world.
So the next
you
thing.
And your numbers.
The next thing, and this is going to get Ian's knickers in a twist here, sRGB. Discuss.
I don't quite get where they're going with this one.
Well, Ian had a lot of opinions when we were watching the keynote.
Basically, sRGB is a measure of how many colors the display can output, essentially. And it's very important if you're dealing with lots of photos and graphics stuff, because you want to be able to ensure that what you see on your screen, well, no, sRGB is a subset of the whole spectrum, and sRGB is basically the one that you use for screen use. Whereas if you're designing stuff for print, you might want to use Adobe RGB or there's another Profoto RGB, I think it is. So there are lots of different color spaces out there, and sRGB is just the one that kind of it applies to screen use. So what they're saying, basically, when they say it's sRGB specified, they're saying this is a high quality screen. It can show all these colors at once. So I get that, but I'm not sure everyone in the audience necessarily does. I'm not sure that's the kind of talking point that's really very useful.
Could you answer a question for me on that point, Ian, that I'm sure you know, having just spouted all that about sRGB, which I didn't really know. I remember the original iPhone and then the 3G after it had different color temperatures, and I can't remember which way around it was, but one had a very cold color temperature on the screen. The next one was very warm and more yellow. I think it went from cold to warm from the original iPhone to the 3G.
I think it did too, yeah.
Would this sort of normalize it? If it's sRGB compliant, would that mean that it should be sort of more in the middle, more perfect, if that makes any sense?
It's somewhat independent of the actual gamut. It's just kind of the overall tonality of the screen. So when you're calibrating a display, you decide what color temperature you're going to calibrate it as, and then you kind of take the gamut based on that color temperature calibration. So my desktop display is calibrated to D65, which is 6,500 Kelvin, which is kind of a kind of daylight balance. It's kind of bluish, but not very blue.
you know, if I heard two people in the pub having the conversation we're having here, Ian, I'd probably walk over and knock all their drinks over and storm out.
It's a good thing we're not in the pub right now, Roddy.
So, that's very true. Ultra-fast wireless as well.
Yeah, well, at first I thought this was going to be the Wi-Fi, but it's not.
Well, I thought that too. When they first started talking about it, I thought it was ultra-fast wireless, was some kind of new Wi-Fi technology that we're building into the phones. But it wasn't. It seemed to be LTE.
Although, strangely, I didn't see it in the keynote, and it may be because I was just talking rubbish to you half the time. But I saw somebody mention on a social network that it does now have 5 gigahertz, so it should theoretically have faster Wi-Fi as well. So if anyone saw anything...
That was in the keynote. They definitely said that.
Oh, they did. Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah, and 5 gigahertz is just a less busy band. There's fewer other devices doing things besides Wi-Fi at that frequency, so it have better performance. And that's a good thing. But they didn't... I mean, in last week's Kindle introductions that Amazon, you know, all these new devices, Jeff Bezos spent quite a lot of time talking about MIMO and multiple antennas and things that the new Kindle Fire HD has. So they didn't talk about that today, but it's trickier to get lots of antennas into a smaller device. But I was surprised, you know, it was a bit of a contrast to me, Jeff Bezos spending like 10 minutes talking about Wi-Fi and then Apple kind of going, yeah, it's got 5 gigahertz, on you go.
Jog on.
It's faster, that's what I need to know.
And so the LTE that I sort of pulled you away from there, is going to be, well, I say global LTE, but... Not truly global, is it?
No. Well, they only kind of showed off... What countries was it they showed off? There was America, Canada, Japan, and kind of areas in Asia. Then there was
maps everywhere. They just didn't talk about everywhere.
Well,
so
that's
true. There's a lot of different supported countries.
Yeah, that is possible, actually. Yeah, they maybe did that. But and we've now potentially got LTE over here, in theory. I didn't actually realize that with the Everything Everywhere announcement yesterday. So that's good.
You're right. They do have a whole list of bands on the new iPhone specs page.
Okay.
So they do actually have separate models. They have a GSM model A1428, GSM model A1429, and GSM... So, okay. This is really confusing because they didn't talk about having multiple models, but they do seem to have two models, one which supports CDMA and one which doesn't. Uh-huh. And one of them has LTE bands 4 and 17. One of them has LTE bands 1, 3, 5, 13, and 25.
I've gone cross-eyed. I'm sorry, Ian. there's just all this stuff.
A lot of stuff there.
Can I make an observation here?
What's that?
I'm just looking at the keynote screenshots and looking at all the different places that have LTE that the new iPhone will cater for. And the one place I don't see is Australia, where they had the problem with how they were marketing.
No, I'm sure they did show Australia because
they did.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it right now and I don't see Australia on the maps.
Do you know where Australia is?
I know where I can see the one where it's got, you know, all the Asian countries, and it doesn't have
Australia. It's in a separate one. It was showing a different screenshot, the Australian ones.
I must be looking at the wrong live blog then.
Could be.
I can't remember which live blog I saw.
Well, it was just an observation. Don't shoot the messenger.
Okay, but the point is, from the UK point of view, we're getting LTE on Everything Everywhere, and there was another provider, wasn't there? No, it wasn't. It was the German provider was the two.
Yeah, that's right.
Time. Yeah. So LTE as well. So 20% linear. Sorry, linear. 20% lighter. 80% thinner. A 4-inch screen. Extra row of icons. sRGB for all sRGB fans out there. We've got LTE, potentially faster wireless, albeit we're not 100% sure on that. And the next thing they talked about was the better battery in the iPhone 4S. Not on the iPhone 4S. Better battery than the iPhone 4S.
You'd done that wrong, Paul. I did. If you noticed.
Yes, I did. So, better battery. Are we all happy about that? I have to admit, my iPhone 4S battery is absolutely fine. I have no concerns with that at all.
I'm really unhappy about the fact that it has a better battery. I wanted a shorter battery life.
It's interesting that they managed to do that, considering they put LTE in, and they've made it thinner and lighter, but somehow still managed to get a better battery into it.
And this is the thing you notice with some of the Android phones, you know, that really are packing in loads of tech. And they've got huge batteries in there, but of course, they're huge phones.
Yep.
And they still manage to drain the batteries kind of fast.
Yeah,
despite
absolutely.
That.
It's just not really still optimized, is it?
Yeah.
I think Apple did a good choice in waiting for at least slightly better LTE chips that don't eat battery like insane people. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, okay, sure. You can be first with a technology, but it is often better to be good with a new technology. In the case of the new iPhone, for instance.
Mm-hmm. But I still find with my phone, I mean, I use it quite a bit during the day, and it will, if I leave it charged up overnight, it will be running out of juice by, you know, the evening. So it has a kind of full working day life for me, and it would be nice to have just that little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm saying yeah, but I can't honestly remember a single time where my iPhone 4S has run out of battery. I don't know, you're an iPhone 4, aren't you, Roddy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
And I have absolutely no problem with it at all. I mean, if you compare it against like a kind of Nokia phone of 10 years ago, then it's got a fairly pathetic battery life because that thing went for weeks. But
to be fair, with my last phone before an iPhone was a Nokia N95, and if I did the same thing and unplugged that from the charger at 8 a.m, it would run out before I got home from work.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So we have moved on quite a bit.
Well, okay, fair enough. So, yeah, better battery. So that's great. That's a bit of a tick in the box. I don't think I can ever remember a time where they've announced a new iPhone where they've not had a new battery or a better battery. That seems to be something that they like shouting about. The next thing they covered, and this is the bit that, out of all of the keynote, which I found relatively underwhelming, this was the bit I was quite interested in. It's kind of silly, but the camera. And it wasn't for the camera itself, because they did list a whole bunch of features, which we'll go into in a second, but it was the panorama mode that I really liked. They showed a screenshot, which, and with the kind of live blogs, you kind of had to imagine how it works. But what it seemed to be was you took a photograph and then said you wanted a panorama, and it brought this little interface up on the screen that allowed you to kind of scroll across with your finger and then stitch two or three pictures together, which effectively made, as they showed in the keynote there, a 28 megapixel photo. Now, taking a couple of them is probably going to end up using up either your entire bandwidth from your ISP or is going to take up all the space in your phone, but nevertheless, it looked like quite a cool little thing. I'd never seen anything about that until tonight.
I played with that Microsoft app. Is it PhotoSynth?
Yeah, yeah.
Which lets you do panoramas, and the panoramas were cool, but the app was awful. Mm. So it'd be nice to see if it can improve on that.
Yeah, yeah. That was quite nice.
I mean, it's something that's appeared in many compact cameras over the last couple of years. So certainly I was looking at a Sony camera this week that has that built in. But I don't think in any other phone so far. So it's quite a neat feature.
Otherwise, though, the camera seemed to be pretty similar to the 4S, didn't it?
That it has sapphire crystal instead of glass, like I believe the 4S had.
Fancy.
Yeah, I mean, they said that, I think it's an improved sensor, but on pure specs, it's absolutely identical to the iPhone 4S camera. I'm actually looking at the compare page at the moment, and every single element is the same. The one thing that has improved is the front side FaceTime camera. It's improved from just VGA resolution to high def 720p, and it's also got a backside illumination sensor in there as well now, apparently. So that should be good for FaceTime, I guess. And I suppose if you want to take a photo of yourself, it'll actually be a better photo this time.
Can we have the obligatory joke about the backside illumination? For taking photographs of people's bottoms, of course.
Don't forget there's a bottom mic as well.
Oh, that's funny. Can I wind back a little bit on the specs? I think we passed one little bit of the keynote, which is material to me, where it has, of course, the CPU and the GPU are two times as fast. Mm-hmm. And it did go on then to do the games demo. But one thing I've noticed is that I'm still on an iPhone 4, and I find that iOS 5 is actually pretty slow these days. It's the kind of feeling I got back on my, 3G when iOS 4 came out, and there's all this lag. I don't know how you guys are finding it with 4S. I mean, logic would dictate it's better, but do you think they're really needing to up this, not just for figures, but to keep the newer versions of iOS running nicely?
I think I see a problem there, Roddy. It is that you haven't greased your phone recently.
Oh, I should oil it up, shouldn't I? Mm-hmm. I don't want to go in dry. Is there a problem, Paul?
We're not laughing.
Right, okay.
Always.
I've completely lost my train of thought now. What were you talking
I'm kind
about?
Of disappointed that they didn't improve the video in a way. It still does like 30 frames per second in full HD. Okay. I would like to have been a little bit more like 30, up from 30 to 60 at least. But
do you use the video camera a lot in yours, Robert?
I don't have a video camera in mind, so oh well.
All right, okay.
But I have like a standalone video camera that I like to retire in favor of a new iPhone.
Right, okay.
That's possibly, I think I'm right in saying that obviously if you up the frame rate, then you have to up the video sizes quite significantly, and therefore you have to up the processing power required. So I think possibly they're just not willing to do that yet because they want to have more storage in there, or they want to have a bit more headroom in the processor.
No, that's true.
So it was a faster photo capture as well, 40% faster photo capture.
That's a nice touch.
It's a nice touch, but I frankly don't see... And now, maybe I'm the wrong person to comment on this because I don't use the camera. I don't take very many photos whatsoever. But I don't really see the speed in it taking photographs that big a deal. I really saw it with the 3GS and the 3 way, way back. The speed of that, you could go and get yourself a sandwich in the time it took for it to actually take a photograph on that thing. But... In the 4S now, I have absolutely no problem with that, but I'm assuming for people...
There's the thing, Paul. You're a 4S user, and this phone is designed in almost every way not to appeal to you as a 4S user, but to appeal to me as an iPhone 4 user. And I do notice the lag when I'm taking a photo. And I can hear 40% faster than the 4S, which is already faster than my phone. Wow, it's going to be blinding. And I think, yeah, I could go for that.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly the two things that I photograph the most are my children and my cats, neither of which move particularly slowly. So just to try and capture that moment, that little second of lag is infuriating.
The other things that they brought in was face detection with the video camera. So that's quite interesting because they've had face detection on the actual phone, on the photographs for quite a while. So face detection on the video camera is cool. FaceTime camera and HD we've already covered. The next thing was take photographs while recording. This is a very cool feature.
I like that.
Yeah, and albeit I've just said that I hardly use it, I quite often like taking a video, but then I very rarely look at the videos back, and I'd quite like to be able to take snaps as the video is recording. That's an awesome feature for me.
Just to capture the salient points as a still image.
Yeah. I don't know what salient means, so I'm just agreeing with you in case...
Just agree with me, or I'll get unpredictable and violent.
Also, has 3 microphones, front, back, and bottom. Wow.
It's front, bottom, and back, bottom.
Why do they have these 3? Is this noise cancelling?
Yeah, why do they?
Is it noise cancelling, maybe?
They had 2 before, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
One was noise cancelling.
Presumably, the bottom is your actual for making and taking phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, the back is for recording the audio when you're taking a video.
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay. And the top has always been the noise cancelling, hasn't it?
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah, that'll be the 3.
I think we've just answered our own question then, haven't we?
Yes, we have. So, 3 microphones. Wideband audio. Now, what does this mean? And I'm going to direct that at Ian because I think you tried to explain it to me.
I feel like Ian's going to answer this.
Yes. Can you do it without stating numbers? I don't want any numbers.
Okay. Since time immemorial, phone a bit crappy, really. And they've had limited bandwidth, and it got worse with mobile phones because you had to fit it into these narrow channels. So basically what this means is, you know, it can just use a bit more bandwidth and make your voice sound better, but only if the network supports it. And they mentioned Orange, which I don't think necessarily applies. Well, Orange is not just in the UK. It could be as other places as well, I think. And Deutsche Telekom are going to support it. So we might not get it here. We might not notice any differences at all. And again, I think it's one of these things that maybe depends on the other phone that you're speaking to supporting it as well. Nice if it works for you, but might not be all that much.
If only they could do the same technology in Skype, and then our podcast would sound better.
It'd be crystal clear every time.
So the wideband audio, we then also had the widely criticized and photographed all over China, the new connector, the new connector, which is in fact reversible, and it does come with an adapter. So that the rumor mill was spot on with that one.
It comes with the world's biggest adapter as well,
and I think
it's huge.
Ian, you gave it a new name. You christened it.
Did I?
It was either you or Ian that did it. Fat adapter.
Oh, it was Ian.
The fat adapter.
Say it again.
Yes, the fat adapter.
Fat adapter.
I've decided I think for the next time they evolve the connector, they're going to make it so you can turn it inside out as well.
So we have an adapter, and I think broadly that was the key points that I took out of the iPhone keynote. So we had 20% lighter, 18% thinner, 4-inch screen, which has an extra row of icons, sRGB, faster wireless and LTE, better battery, the camera had smart pixels, better low light performance, faster photo capture, panorama mode, untouched photos, which was a little dig at Nokia, face detection of the video camera, FaceTime camera is HD, take photographs while you're recording, 3 microphones front, back and bottom, wideband audio, a connector, and that was it. Is there anything else that came out in the iPhone?
There was one other thing that they didn't mention in the keynote, which is so amazingly important, I can't believe they skipped over it.
Right.
The new iPhone 5 does not use a micro SIM, it uses a nano SIM.
Okay. Oh.
Which is not compatible with existing micro SIM cards. So, funny enough, because it's smaller and it wouldn't fit.
So it's a case of like the old SIM cards you could trim down to a micro SIM.
Yeah, I think you're basically stuffed with that. I think you've got to get one from your carrier or just, you know, build one yourself somehow.
Okay.
Okay.
And that frees up valuable space inside to make it lighter and thinner.
Yes, several millimeters, I'm sure.
Yes. But every millimeter counts, Ian.
Indeed. So I'm glazing over that one. The next thing they covered was iOS 6. Was there anything new here? And we had quite a bit of a moan when we were watching this. Is there anything new here that they did not cover in WWDC?
I think being the iOS show, we better find something to cover here. we're missing our
kind of toast on that.
Well, I mean, we covered it all after WWDC, though. I mean,
I think we saw more of Maps, though.
We did.
To be fair.
Yeah, the only thing I noted down was the point of interest search engine, which they then didn't really cover, or they maybe did, and it just wasn't covered in the live blog that I was watching. But what I took that to be was, and I could kind of see why they've done this, when you use a sat-nav in the car and you click on point of interest, you have every point of interest from John O'Groats to Land's End. And it doesn't kind of say, you know, like if you want, I want a restaurant, and then it lists all these different cuisines. And I live in, frankly, the arse end of nowhere. And we have the option of maybe Indian, maybe Chinese, and maybe a local chip shop. We do not, under any circumstances, anywhere near me, have Afghanistan food. But that's the first option you get. So maybe this is fixing that problem, and that would be quite cool.
And if you're an Afghan chef, there's a niche in the market down in the borders, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure there wasn't anything new that they showed off. I just had a quick scroll back through the live blog.
What
they
about showed, full screen Safari? I don't think I remembered that from before.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
That's kind of neat. I like that.
The sharing of tabs in Safari they did discuss that in iCloud.
They did cover
that.
I think that's another dangerous one. That and shared photo streams, that could go badly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which we sort of covered the photo stream issue before, where you're taking photographs of perhaps more intimate moments that then iCloud flashes up everywhere. But your browsing tabs, shared computers, oh man.
Well, I use that already with Chrome. I don't have too much of an issue with that. Chrome
Look
already
at Mr.
does that.
Chrome over there then.
I use Chrome, iPad, iPhone, my work computer and my home desktop. And I love sharing the tabs. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, you're weird.
Well, okay, fair enough. But the point is, I like it.
So what else do we have that is potentially interesting and unique that wasn't in WWDC?
Well, I think that is the crux of the problem with this thing. And for the first hour, we were seeing very few things that we hadn't already known about. Now, part of that is because of the... even though Mr. Cook sat at All Things D and said that they're doubling down in security, I almost feel that this was the most leaked, with the exception of the phone that was left in a bar, which was nobody's fault.
Shocking, wasn't it?
This was the most leaked iPhone ever. Everything was... We knew about absolutely everything in this keynote or in this launch. There wasn't really anything.
How do we feel about the fact that everything was leaked? Would we rather they were completely secret? Are we happy to have known about it beforehand? Or, you know, do we want that big reveal? Do we want the showmanship?
I think I want the showmanship. That's why I watch these launches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then, like I said earlier, it didn't make much of a difference anyway, because it was just sort of refining things. I could almost believe they did it on purpose, because they knew they weren't, you know, changing the world with this one.
Mm.
Doesn't matter.
Perhaps. Anyway, after they discussed iOS 6, we got a bit of a shock because this had not been leaked. However, depending on how you look at it, maybe somewhat underwhelming. I'm not going to go too much in iTunes because being the iOS show, that's sort of we're kind of disconnected from iTunes in a literal sense. They've given it a new skin and stuff like that. But the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, I want iTunes to not be one giant bloated app for all of our iOS devices. That's
and if all the they're adding iCloud to it
And making it more bloated. And if all they've done. If all they've done is just reskinned the current one, and what I really want them to do is I want them to take the code base of the current one and just somebody accidentally push the delete key and lose all the backups. And then they have to recode it from scratch again and actually make a slimline exactly for purpose with none of this legacy junk in there. And if this is that, then fantastic. But to me, there's nothing telling me that this wasn't just a reskinning of the current poop storm that we already have that is iTunes.
I suppose first of all, you might find that I'd be interested to see that in this reskinning, does it change the interface for syncing between iOS devices? That'd be interesting. It might be just the same, but I think that's something that's remained the same since the first iPhone came out and needs a bit of love. But also, I think you know this is all going to come maybe in the next iteration of OS X. I think as they make it more. You know, a more of a blur between iOS and OS X that we might see all of these things being divorced.
Yeah, I agree entirely because one of the things we saw in this presentation was the store interface looks a lot more similar between the iOS devices and the desktop now. The most interesting thing for me in this presentation, although it's not iOS specific, was the reskin, because this is the first Mac app, as far as I know, that is using Helvetica as the system font, which is not everything else on the Mac is the standard Lucida Grande. Everything else uses it. And iTunes historically has been this kind of the thing they experiment with when they want to do new interfaces. And people have been talking about new fonts for macOS because they started doing high resolution Macs, Retina Macs, and the tired old system font isn't quite looking as good. So it's entirely possible this is heralding a closer interface style between the Mac and iOS because they'll start moving everything on the Mac to Helvetica, which of course was originally introduced with the iPhone.
Yes, I quite like the little mini player. That was quite nice. That's the look of it, touch. It looked like a nice little thing. But getting back to iOS, so we have new Nanos and new Touches.
Can I be a cocky cock and just pull things back? Oh, that's all I do in this podcast, isn't it? You take one step forward, I take two steps back. And you know what, Paul? I'm going to keep doing it. I think it was just a salient point that it comes out on September the 19th. That's iOS 6.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yes. So we get our hands on it a week today, is that right?
Yeah, and the new iPhone comes, pre-orders on the 14th, so that's Friday, and it gets released, I did actually write this down, where is it?
21st.
It gets released the 21st, so yeah, so you'll be able to queue up, I would imagine, on the 21st and pick up that bad boy.
Wait for your postman, hope he doesn't get mugged.
Exactly. So
sorry, Paul, do you want to bang on about your iPods now?
Yes, the new iPod Nano, 7th generation, it's thin. It's very thin. It's very, very thin. It's 38% thinner than the last iPod Nano. It comes with a multi-touch interface, but this one appears to be an actual multi-touch interface as opposed to the previous iPod Nano, which had a multi-touch interface in a kind of a comedy style because you needed to be a three-year-old with fingers of a three-year-old to be able to actually multi-touch on that thing.
Those fingers still being attached to the three-year-old.
I would imagine. Well, I don't know. It doesn't need a pulse.
I'm just the first, I think being an iOS show, thinking of the old Nano and the new Nano, is the old Nano didn't run iOS, and I don't think this one does either, does it?
Really, does it?
Do you think it's a custom?
I think it's, well, it certainly looks to be like
it looks more iOS-like than ever, but I really don't think it is.
It has to be. They wouldn't have written
on the specs page. The resolution is 240 by 432 pixels, which would just be weird if it was iOS.
It wouldn't make sense for such a small and light device to need to run with such a limited capability to run full iOS anyway.
It must be a breed of iOS though, because they wouldn't have written
probably
an entirely
a branch.
New,
but I mean, yeah. If you looked at how limited the original Nano was, there was no reason for it to be iOS. It only did about four things.
Well, this one is bringing back the ability to watch video on it. So you've got quite a nice little widescreen display. There's an FM tuner with live pausing, a pedometer. It has Bluetooth in it. There was something else that I just remembered there when I was talking. It comes in multicolors as well, which is quite nice. It has the podcast app.
iOS or a branch of iOS affects what color it is.
That's very true, but it does come in different colors.
The form factor is very reminiscent of iOS devices as well. You know, it's got the volume keys on the side, and it's got the sleep wake on the top, and it's got the home button at the bottom. And of course, it's now moving to the new Lightning connector as well. So it's an iOS device in everything except the fact that it doesn't run iOS.
Ultimately, all it's really got is it's got QuickTime to do pretty much all the video and audio and probably the radio as well. And it needs a little, it's got about five icons on its springboard. So it's not going to need most of the libraries. It could just be a little sort of a little cut of Darwin or something running in the background.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see how it connects to other things, because obviously it's got Bluetooth now, and that's a first for a dumb iPod, I guess. So I want to know how that works, really.
But it'll just be for Bluetooth audio, won't it? So it'll just be, what do you call it? I forget what it's called. A2D something?
A2DP.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It did look quite nice.
I would have thought they would have maybe thought about letting you sync over Bluetooth, potentially.
I doubt it. I bet it doesn't.
I'm just looking for any mention of that.
No. Well, we did look for any kind of mention of what Wi-Fi as well, but we only found FM radio.
Yeah, that there's no sign of Wi-Fi exciting. At all. Because it was a little kind of area down the bottom of the new Nano. It looked very similar to if you have a 3G iPad, that kind of plastic area across the top. And so what we were waiting for was to see something about any kind of Wi-Fi specification, but nothing came out. So that was the Nano. That looked very nice. A nice little device.
I think if it had Wi-Fi, it would be like a proper computer, like the iPod Nano and the iPhone R. So I think that strongly suggests it's not like iOS under the hood.
Because as soon as you've got Wi-Fi, you're setting an expectation that it should be able to go on the web and things like that. And even for just sort of more syncing activities, you're going to need more complex interface.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
The next thing they released was the new iPod Touch. The lightest iPod Touch, 88 grams that they made, 6.1 millimeter thick. A Retina display, a 4-inch display, the same as the iPhone 5, carrying an A5 processor. The battery life is significantly more, covering 40 hours of music. 5-megapixel camera, an LED flash, autofocus, full HD video.
I can't believe you just meh'd the camera there, Paul. That's the first good camera they've ever put into this thing. That's actually a big thing for me.
That's not a great camera.
I can actually take real still photos that don't look like, I don't know, something that dog regurgitated.
I suppose I'm the wrong person, as I've said before about the photograph thing. Maybe I'm being unfair because it doesn't seem to me like it's going to be anything of interest to me. But please take the floor, gentlemen, and tell me why that camera is a good thing.
I'm just thinking I'd pay to see a dog regurgitating still images. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah. Real iPod Touch that has a non-sucking camera, and it kind of really replaces an iPhone in many aspects.
I suppose it does have full HD video as well, and face detection in that too. So
that's good for apps as well, isn't it? Because a lot of the augmented reality apps and a lot of these apps the kids want to use do use photographs, don't they?
Yeah,
or video.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. There is a lot of things here that kind of say to me that they're looking more at the kiddie market, because you've got like the iPod Touch with the loop wrist strap on the back of it as well, coming in different colors as well, which surely is going to encourage them. With the camera and the face detection, things like that as well. But you've also got Siri on the Touch, which is very interesting. And the interesting thing about this is, why put on the Touch but not the iPad?
Well, not all the iPad. Yeah, it's not even on the 3, is it?
No.
Sorry, the new iPad.
The new iPad. Full Siri, as far as we could tell, on the iPod Touch.
But isn't that coming in iOS 6 to the new iPad as well?
I don't think it's full Siri.
It's coming to the new iPad, but not to the iPad 2. But the The iPad 2, I think it's a processor limitation, therefore, because the iPad 2 is an A4 chip, and so this is getting i5 for the first time. It comes with Siri as well.
Yeah. But it had dictation on the iPad 2, right?
You do have dictation. Yes, that's right. You do. And you currently have dictation
on the iPad 2. Yet. Yeah, so I think that might be coming in iOS 6.
Well, you definitely have an iPad
feature. Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, my bad.
We definitely have an iPad 3.
Confused.
We're so confused. We're just four very confused men.
You definitely have dictation at the moment on the iPad 3.
The thing that confuses me about Siri on this iPod is that I always thought what they were doing with Siri is they were limiting it to 3G devices because it's something you would really want to use on the move. Mm-hmm. And I know the iPod is a very mobile device that you can take it with you anywhere, but it is only Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Mm. It seems to contradict their policy, really, doesn't it?
It does a bit. So the
I see that they've also got the panorama sweep feature on the iPod Touch now as well.
Yeah.
On the new one.
Yeah. And that,
well, at least the camera is good enough to do something sensible with it, so, yeah.
And their final announcement was, which we're just going to kind of dust over because it's not really iOS specific, but new headphones called EarPods. And apparently...
Love the name.
Yeah, they've scanned hundreds of ears looking for commonality. And as far as we can tell, this is the only product announced in this event today that is available today. So you can go out, well, tomorrow for us, you can go out and buy yourself a new set of these headphones tomorrow at your nearest Apple store, as we understand it. Thoughts on this one, gentlemen? Is this exciting? Is this meh?
You'll just be wearing your new earpods tomorrow with them dangling uselessly below you because you've got no new iPhone 5 to plug them into.
Very true. I would imagine the same functionality will work because it's still got the kind of the plus, minus, pause.
Yeah, they look good. They look comfortable. They look like they've sort of bridged the gap to the Apple fancy headphones that you've got, Paul.
Yep.
Which presumably get covered in your earwax.
it makes them shiny.
It'd be cool. I mean, if they're the same price, then fair enough. The old design's pretty old now. So
and pretty terrible. Let's be fair.
Yeah.
They never sounded very good. I mean, if they sound better, I think it's a good thing. It's going to be bundled with most of the higher end devices. So great. And I guess the design. Now that I look at them, it's kind of this one piece plastic shell. So again, it's one of these things that you see first and then you actually kind of look at it. And you go, how the hell do they make those things?
Yeah.
Magic.
I can't see it being noise cancelling because you kind of need that kind of the rubber tip to get it noise cancelling. But anyway.
But luckily, if there is in fact Johnny I video all about how they're made, so I'll watch it later and find out.
Oh well, we'll wait with bated breath until you update us all on that. And then finally, at the end, they listed all the prices. Now, this is interesting. So the iPod Shuffle, still 2 gigabytes, starting at $49. You then had the iPod Nano. One capacity just for the iPod Nano at 16 gigabyte, $149. So that's $50 in between those. You then jump up another $50, and you get the iPod Touch 16 gigabyte for $199. You then jump up another $50, and it's the 32 gigabyte iPod Touch for $249. Another $50 jump, and you got the iPod Touch 32 gigabyte $299. And then you got $100 jump up to the 64 gigabyte iPod Touch for $399. Where on earth, if this alleged iPad mini exists, is that going to jump into that price banding there? That just doesn't make sense. I can't see whereabouts it's going to go.
Maybe it wrong. Maybe the iPod Touch just is the iPad mini.
That's crazy talk.
Well, let's say for the sake of argument that you get like a 16 gigabyte iPad mini for $299. So you've got less storage, but you've got a bigger screen and it probably does a bit more than the iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm. I think
there is still space in there. There is going to be overlap, and that's something that you don't see very often with Apple, but they do sometimes do it. I mean, the iPod Touch and the iPod Classic have overlapped many times before. Just a different product for a slightly different market, so I think they'll be okay with that.
But we'll wait and see. I think to my mind, we're now talking about an iPad Mini as opposed to an iPod Touch Maxi. Because I kind of feel when they were launching new iPod Touches, they would have mentioned that at the same time. But we'll see. Anyway, is there anything else, gentlemen, we need to discuss about the keynote this evening before we move on into our Trouble Gussets section?
I'm bored of keynotes now.
We have been talking about it for three hours.
Towards the end, it's unusual because we were following various live blogs and all of them stayed up for the entire keynote. And I don't know if that's because live blogs have gotten better or if there just seems to be less interest in this one because so much of the stuff that was announced we kind of already knew about.
Yeah, it's possible.
They'll all be predicting the end tomorrow, won't they?
Yeah, no, Apple Zeitgeist is, you know, there's somebody else is going to come on and there's going to be a live blog and it's going to go down. And people were like, their live blog went down. This is exciting.
Well, I can tell you it won't be Samsung.
So, this podcast.
Let's get stuck into that gusset, Paul.
Well, let's just thank UK2 briefly, just before we go into that. So, this podcast and all the other stuff that happens on the British Tech Network is brought to you by UK2.net. They are fantastic. I recently moved a whole bunch of my sites over to them and I've been very, very happy with them. Basically, all you need to do is if you head on over to thebritishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link, and you will see a whole bunch of voucher codes there for DNS, domain management, everything like that. Click on the UK2 link on that page. That'll whisk you off to UK2. And in there, you can go away, just go nuts, just buy everything that you possibly could ever want for a run a web service, for a run a blog to talk about Apple events and everything like that. So let's just say we wanted to create ourselves a blog, and we will call this streakofapplegenius.com. That was a really rubbish name, actually. I could have worked on that one, actually. Should really prepare these links a little bit better. Anyway, so we could register that domain name. You just pop the domain name in there. When you come through to actually putting together the putting in your payment details and everything like that, before you put your payment details in, pop in all the voucher codes that you saw on the British Tech Network site. Once you've processed all those, just keep on clicking. It'll come up with some error messages saying you haven't filled in boxes. That's fine. Keep on adding more in and adding more in, and you'll see the numbers will drop down. There's a couple of things, actually, you could put in a voucher code, and it completely makes it free. So, try them out. UK2, absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend them. Also, once you have logged into and created an account on UK2, whenever you're logging into your account to do anything in the future, if you could come through British Tech, because it really helps us, because they know that we've sent you just by their click-throughs and everything like that. So that's British Tech. That's UK2. They support British Tech, and you should support them. So on to digging about in our gusset. We only have three tonight, which I'm kind of glad about because we talked quite a bit about the keynote there.
Let's hope you know the answers tonight, Paul.
We've done
our homework.
The first one is Laura Weston. I cannot get access to iCloud.com at work, but Gmail works fine. Do you know if there is a way to collect MobileMe iCloud email in Gmail?
But the first thing I'm wondering is that I know I can't access iCloud.com, you know, the web interface. Yeah. At work, so it's blocked, as is Gmail, actually. But surely you could access all your iCloud stuff on your iOS device without going through their firewall.
You can.
Just a thought.
For argument's sake, let's just say that you want to be able to access it on Gmail. I'm assuming that you were going to be, because you probably have 3G or something like that.
Gmail on the web.
Yep.
I don't use Gmail, as we well know, but you can do fetch email in that, can't you?
You can do fetch. The downside to that is if you have moved over to iCloud, you cannot do fetch email because it only works on POP3, and iCloud doesn't support POP3, it only supports IMAP.
Okay.
So I think the only way to do this, having done a wee bit of research into this, I think the only way to do this is if you open up iCloud, not on your desktop, so don't open up your mail program. Actually, go into iCloud on a machine that you can access your email, so presumably you've got a computer at home or something like that, your iPad or something. And just inside the settings, on the first page, there's a box that says forward email. Just pop in your Gmail address, and then underneath it says delete messages once forwarded. Tick that, so then you don't end up with two inboxes filling up. And then every time an email comes to your inbox, pings it off to your Gmail account. It's not ideal because you're not actually opening up both of them, and you're not able to send from that email address, but at least that does mean you're going to be able to get your emails in your Gmail account. And I believe that's the only way you can do it since iCloud completely abandoned POP3. Unless any other gentleman have another idea around how we can do that. I'm going to take deathly silence as a no.
No, I can't figure out anything else either. Yeah.
That's reasonably elegant, though. I think that's sort of the opposite of what I suggested with fetching, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you used to be able to do that until iCloud dropped POP3, so all good.
Gotcha.
The next one from Grant Buchanan. How do I get text password on my iPhone and iPad? I only have the option of 4 digits, but I know text is possible.
I know this one.
Okay, go.
You go into settings, general, and passcode lock. I'm assuming you may have set this up already for a numeric password. And all there is in the passcode lock settings, there's a simple passcode option, which defaults to on, which means a four-digit number. If you switch that off, it will ask you for your existing PIN number and your new password, and then that's your ready to go.
Superb.
I think it's worth saying, I think I'm right in saying that this is a feature that has come into iOS relatively recently. I think if you're still on iOS 4, I'm not sure if you'll have that. So if you don't have it, it's maybe because you're still running an older version of iOS.
Good call, Ian.
Yeah. So
I think
check
actually iOS 4 does have it, at least in the last 4.2.1.
What if he's on iOS 3, though? What then?
Then he'll be stuck with only the numbers, I believe. Yeah. No alphanumeric.
That's a hard life.
So, very tough.
This final one, we got asked this. I got asked this over Twitter. And I'm not sure if this person intended us to try and answer this question in the iOS show, the web show, or he was just asking my opinion.
Just asking for help.
So I did quite a bit of research into this and I can't find the answer. So hopefully one of you guys know. And if not, if somebody who's listening knows the answer to this, please, please let us know. This is from Scott Smale on Twitter. Please can I ask, do you know how to get rid of the important mail group in my emails? I've looked everywhere and cannot find out how. Now, I tweeted back to him just to confirm that he is talking about Gmail, and I cannot find a way to get rid of that. As far as I can tell, it's baked into Gmail and you cannot get rid of it. But
that was the first thing I was thinking, is it's Gmail, isn't it? Because yeah. I don't get those.
It's based on, it's because of the way Gmail works. When you connect to Gmail with a normal mail client, it pretends it's just a regular mail server, mm-hmm. and things like the important mail group show up as folders. Because that's the only way Gmail can represent them to a mail client that doesn't understand that it's Gmail. So because it's a baked-in feature of Gmail, I'm pretty sure you can't turn it off.
Oh, heck, you know what? I actually figured out how to do this with all the folders on my partner's Gmail account, and I've forgotten how to do it.
You research that until next show and you tell us.
I let you all down. If I remember, I'll tell you.
I think, Ruddy, you can mount a different folder by default on Gmail, so if you mount the inbox rather than like the top level folder, you don't see all the other stuff.
So Ian,
but that's not
very,
a good way
very
of doing
it. Memory here, I think you do it in Gmail itself, and you go into settings and there's a bit where you can tick which folders you want to be available, and you go in and you untick it in Gmail itself, and you untick all the ones you don't want, because you get the same problem on mail on the Mac, that it will duplicate all your mail because of all these folders. So
I think that's true, but I think that's maybe only true for labels you define. I'm not sure you can do that.
It's got default ones in it as well.
Oh, it has, okay.
Whether or not you can do the important one, I don't know if that was in there, but it does have them.
Right, well, Scott, if you could try that and let us know, and if anybody else is listening happens to know the answer to this, then please, please give us a shout and let us know, and we can pass on that message to Scott. So thank you very much. And finally this evening, our picks. Nobody's allowed to pick the iPhone 5 or any of the stuff in the keynote, because that's frankly cheating. So I'm going to go straight to Robert first. What is your pick for this evening, sir?
This evening I am going to pick the app called Calvetica. I kind of got very tired of the built-in calendar app, and I went looking around and I found this rather nice-looking little gem, which, well, it talks to all the calendars built into iOS and looks better, and it's actually even faster on an old iPhone 3. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Very nice.
I don't have the price right here now, though, but it's not very expensive. It's a very nice little
app. Sure, it's 6 £9, but I'll have a look while Ian, you're telling us what your
I just to say, I use Calvetica too, and the very best thing about it for me is that you can enter a new appointment much, much faster than you can with a built-in calendar. That's what it was designed for originally.
It's fantastic. So much faster. It's lovely.
But my pick this week is Super Hexagon, which is a game. You can get on the App Store. Certainly at the time we're recording, hopefully by the time this goes out, it is reduced to a mere 69 pence. It will be I think £1.79 eventually. But it is currently on offer. It's a game by a guy called Terry Kavanagh, who is best known for a previous title called VVVVVV, which was an indie game on the PC. But Super Hexagon is one of these fantastic addictive games where all you have to do is survive. And you control a little triangle and lines come at you in a hexagon shape, and you have to avoid the lines and stay alive for as long as possible. And my record so far on the easiest difficulty level, which is hard, is I think 33 seconds. And on the hardest difficulty level, my record is 5.3 seconds. So that gives you an idea of wow, how tricky it is. But it is amazingly well designed. You always want to have another go. I didn't believe it before I tried it, and now I just can't stop picking it up and having a go. Also, the music is fantastic. It's kind of chiptune-y, but it really fits the game, and it actually helps you because the lines that come at you kind of have a rhythm that fits the music. So don't play it with the sound off.
Very good, very good.
Interestingly, the way Ian described the gameplay of Super Hexagon is exactly the same way he described his nervous breakdown.
Yeah, the lines keep coming at you, but the soundtrack was different for that, right?
And he's not a triangle anymore.
No. No, the levels are named after shapes, so level 2 is line, level 3 is triangle, level 4 is square, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, Ian, they think you're better now. Just, you know, don't give them any reason to think otherwise.
Rod, guy, for like taking all the details of my life and making it into this game.
Roddy, what is your pick this evening? Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Roddy. Yep. What's your pick this evening?
We dropped that. Is it time for my pick?
It's time for your pick.
I don't want to sound like I'm ill prepared or anything, but I hadn't picked anything, and then I did, and I've forgotten what it is.
Right.
It's Pushover, which is £2.49 in the British App Store. And what Pushover does, it's a push notification service. Now, you might think, I've got iOS and iOS already has push notifications. But what it does, it can tie into web applications. So if you've got your own website, you can actually fire Pushover notifications from your website or your web app or your script or anything. If you use if this then that, which is ifttt.com, it's a clever thing that has channels. All the channels are things like your Facebook account, your Twitter account, your phone number, your email, lots of services you use, and you then put them into recipes. So you could say, if you know weather says it's going to rain tomorrow, then send me a text message, say it's going to rain, bring an umbrella. And what Pushover does is it links into that and lets you have pop-up notifications come from any of these events. So it's I'm finding some really cool recipes on IFTTT, ifthisthenthat.com, and really cool to have them come up as proper notifications rather than text messages or emails. So if you use IFTTT, you definitely have to have this. £2.49.
Very good, Pushover. We'll put all the links for these in the show notes. My final one tonight is GoTasks, which is basically a free little iOS app for both iPad and iPhone that links into your task list in your Gmail. And I think it's pretty cool. I've tried pretty much every task list under the sun. The ones that have too much functionality, I just get bored of and can't use because there's just too much to do. Ones that have too little, I can't use because there's not enough functionality. So I need somewhere right in the middle. And for the moment, I've only been using this for about a week and a half, but for the moment, GoTasks is right on that sweet spot for me of just enough information and just enough functionality for me to actually start using it and having task lists. You can share tasks and everything like that, and so you can send tasks to other people, receive tasks, you can put due dates and everything like that, and it brings up notifications and stuff. But yes, it's free, GoTasks. I would highly recommend it. So finally, if you've liked what you've heard tonight, we would really appreciate if you'd head over to the iTunes store and give us a review. The star ratings really help us get up the charts, so we'd really, really appreciate you having a go at that. If you want to email something to Trouble Gusset, or you have any comments, complaints, queries, anything like that, quandaries, you can just email them over at britishtechnews@gmail.com, and they will wing their way to us. They have a team of robots that fire the different emails out in the different directions, so we will receive anything.
Really? That's extraordinary.
Yes, they do, yeah.
He's making it up.
However, if you would like the more personal approach and you like just getting touchy-feely with your podcasters, you can tweet us directly. I am at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. It's Paul, W-H-E-A-T-L-E-Y. Roddy, who are you on Twitter?
I'm R-O-D-T-I on Twitter.
And Robert, who are you?
I'm at Streak Machine on the Twitter.
And Ian, finally, who are you?
I am Maniacyak, which is M-A-N-I-A-C-Y-A-K.
That's great. And we will be back in just over 2 weeks, because this one's coming out a little bit earlier just because of the Apple keynote. So probably about 2.5 weeks before you have our dulcet tones dripping in your ears again. So I thank you very much for listening, and good night.
No, you hang up.